National Federation of Independent Business President Todd Stottlemyre, thanks for joining us today on HealthOH.org.
Thanks for having me.
Tell us, what is the number one concern when it comes to health care for small businesses?
Well, the number one concern for small business has been the access to quality, affordable health care. And small businessmen and women across the country have told us this for the past 20 years, that they want access to quality, affordable health care. And fundamentally, it's around cost.
And you mentioned the time frame of 20 years. How has it changed in the last 20 years?
Well, a lot has changed in the last 20 years. Just in the last 8 years, the average small business is paying about 129% more for health insurance premiums. Health care costs continue to increase. And for the small business owner, the man or woman who has a small business, they pay about 20% more for the health care that they receive for themselves and their employees compared to a large business.
And why is that?
Well, they simply don't get the efficiencies of being in large risk pools, and that's very important to be able to spread risk and spread cost. And because these are smaller businesses, 5, 10, 15 employees, they cannot get into large risk pools. So they're paying a lot more for their insurance. The other reason is that small business is very split. About half of the small business community, they're in the small group insurance market. The other half is in the individual market. And that's just a very tough place to be today, both in the small group market, where you can't get into big risk pools, and in the individual market, where you're buying insurance as an individual.
The NFIB has come up with 10 principles for healthcare reform. They include universal, affordable, competitive, transparent, evidence-based, private, unbiased, portable, efficient, and realistic. How did you come up with this list?
Well, very importantly, we've listened to small businessmen and women from across the country for the last 20 years who said this is their number one issue, and we've gone out and really tried to understand their point of view, and that's a central part of who we are as an organization. We've also gone out, and over the past year, we've had some of the best and brightest people in healthcare from around the United States, center, left, right, academic think tank, and others to come in and really work with us on these principles, to come up with a set of principles that we think will fundamentally make health insurance more available and affordable for small businessmen and women.
So how realistic is this list? How do you hope to get to accomplish all 10 of these principles?
Well, we think it's important to have a set of principles, and we think these principles should serve as the basis of any meaningful health care reform activity. I think one thing that's important for policymakers to know and understand, of the 47 million Americans who are uninsured today, 28 million of those are small businessmen and women who own businesses, their employees, and their dependents. So we think we really need to pay attention to small business. You know, our view is if you fix health care for small business, you're going to fix health care for America. So we're running a national campaign called Solutions Start Here. It's a multifaceted campaign to go out and listen to small businessmen and women across the country. We're doing significant research, and we're doing a significant grassroots effort to get small businessmen and women and their employees involved and to let their policymakers know that you have to fix health care for small business.
You're hoping that people will start to listen to small business, and you're also reaching out to small businesses to find out what their problems are.
Well, we think they should listen to small business because we're the ones that create the jobs in America. We represent 50% of the gross domestic product, and today we create all the jobs on a net job basis, meaning that larger businesses, they create jobs, but they lose more jobs than they create. So we are the job engine of the American economy, and yet at the same time, we're the largest part of the working uninsured today in the American economy.
Do you think small businesses felt left out of the equation?
Well, I think they feel a little bit like the stepchild because, you know, again, we create the jobs. We're the biggest piece of the American economy. We're the heart and soul of our communities. And yet the health care crisis is most acute for small businessmen and women and their employees. And so our job is to be their voice, and that's what we're trying to do, to be their voice. We want to be about solutions. I think in 1994, the last meaningful health care reform effort, it was probably enough to say no. Today it's not enough to say no. We want to be part of a solution, and that's why we've put these 10 principles together, and that's why we're working so hard on behalf of small businessmen and women to let policymakers know that health care is the number one concern.
What are, to you, some of the biggest obstacles for reaching these 10 principles?
Well, I think we've had a lot of partisan gridlock, and I think getting people to understand that healthcare reform has to be bipartisan, that we have to do a lot more listening as opposed to talking at or to one another. And one of the reasons that we're participating in a coalition called Divided We Fail with some uncommon organizations that we don't have a lot of in common with historically. That's NFIB, it's AARP, the Business Roundtable, and SEIU, the largest union in the country. There are a lot of things we don't agree on, but we do agree very much that health care needs to be on the agenda for the next president of the United States, as well as long-term financial security. And that's why we're part of this four-member coalition called Divided We Fail. We need to break the partisan gridlock. We need to do something about health care because it's strangling our small business owners across the country. And certainly, you know, being the largest part of the uninsured, working uninsured in America is not something that we want to continue in the future.
As you've been a part of Divided We Fail, do you feel like you've already seen some movement towards breaking that partisan gridlock?
Yeah, absolutely. I think we've been listening to one another, which I think is very important in trying to better understand where we're coming from, because we each represent constituencies that care very passionately about this country, that care very passionately about this country's future, and understand that the current health care crisis is not sustainable. I mean, we already spend 16% of our gross domestic product today on health care. And if we continue on the current path, it's going to be a lot higher. And more people are not going to have access to quality care and to health insurance. And we want that to end. And that's why we're spending a lot of time together. We're up on Capitol Hill meeting with policymakers together. We've launched this national campaign around Divided We Fail. And then NFIB has launched a Solutions Start Here national campaign as well. So, you know, we're not going to agree on everything. But I think very importantly, we're seeing some areas where we can agree, and there are some things we agree right off the bat. Information technology and putting more information technology into healthcare is something we think is very important, and all four groups feel very strongly about that. E-prescriptions and things like that. So there are areas where we do agree, and we're going to continue to work to see where we can find common ground and agreement.
So one area that it's possible that you all disagree on is the notion of mandates or the pay-or-play taxes. And this is something that's mentioned in your 10 principles that's really unacceptable for you. So would you characterize this as a non-negotiable moving forward, and how would that play out as you're talking with groups who likely would think that mandates would be a requirement for forward movement?
Well, two types of mandates. The first are treatment mandates, which get to what do we require insurers to cover. And what we've said is those treatment mandates should be evidence-based, that we really should rely on medical evidence to determine what types of mandates that we should have. And those mandates should be around areas that prevent premature death, around wellness and prevention. And we think, very frankly, it's more important for every woman in America to have access to a mammogram in a timely fashion and on a repeated basis than it is as it exists today in some states where insurers are required to cover hair transplantation and those types of things. Those are not mandates that are fundamentally around preventing premature death, where clearly a mammogram, a colonoscopy, a PSA test for prostate cancer, those are very important treatment mandates. So that's one part. The second part is how you pay for this. And again, the United States today, as a Western industrialized country, it's 16% of our gross domestic product. It's higher than any other country. So the dollars are there. It's how we spend the dollars in the system that we have. And that's why, you know, we've said very clearly that a pay-or-play mandate or a new payroll tax to pay for health care, we really don't understand what that has to do with fundamentally reforming the health care system, because the fundamental issue for our small businessmen and women across the country is affordability. And so if it's not affordable today, and then you're going to put a mandate on top of that to pay additional dollars, we're not sure how that addresses the fundamental issue today around access to quality health care, affordable health care.
So how does that play out with someone who believes that a mandate is necessary for moving forward? How would you work together with someone?
Well, I think we're going to disagree on that. I mean, I think that's something that we feel very strongly, that if you want to change the current path of health care in America, you have to look at the more endemic issues as to why health care costs are increasing so significantly, why only half of the small businesses in this country can afford to provide health insurance to their employees, and a mandate, a pay-or-play mandate, a mandate that we're going to increase a payroll tax, it doesn't get at the fundamental issues of health care today that we need to address in order to change the current path that we're on.
For NFIB, what is an appropriate role for government? Because it seems like in some of the principles that you laid out, you didn't think it was appropriate for government necessarily to be an initiator. You also mentioned crowd out when government plans would crowd out private insurance. And then also the fact that a lot of innovation comes from the private sector. Sure. So how do you see the government playing a role?
Well, you're exactly right. I mean, all the innovation that's taken place in this great country has come from the private sector. The advances in science and certainly many other areas have come from private sector innovation, a free market economy where people have the opportunity to go out with an idea and try something and see if it works. So we feel very strongly that we want to continue to have this innovation as a nation and also in the delivery of health care. We recognize that government has a role. I mean, there's certainly large government programs today in health care, such as the SCHIP program for children, Medicare for older Americans, and Medicaid for Americans with less means. And we're not talking about those issues. What we want to continue to see is that there is a vibrant private market for health insurance that allows innovation and creativity to flourish so we can continue to have these types of advances that have made this country such a great country as it is today.
Talk about the tax code and how our current tax code affects small business.
Well, it's unequal, and that's why one of our principles is unbiased, because today the tax code is very biased towards large businesses, particularly as it relates to the self-employed. If you're an entrepreneur and you're self-employed and you go out and purchase insurance, you do not get the same tax benefits as an employee who works for a large company in a large group insurance market, where that insurance is neither taxable to the employee and it's also deductible to the employer. That doesn't exist if you're a self-employed individual. So we think the tax code should be unbiased, that it shouldn't direct people toward the employer-provided market or the individual market, that each person should have equal tax benefits, if you will, in the purchase of health insurance and health care.
And another issue that you all bring up is the notion of being able to pool risk, especially across state lines, which is something that small businesses currently can't do, correct?
That's correct.
So how, for you, will this be an issue that needs to be tackled and potentially solve problems for you all?
Well, we think pooling is important because it really gets to competition and the ability to lower cost. If small businesses can get into larger risk pools, that allows them to spread cost. And if you can do that, that can bring overall costs down. It also introduces competition because in a lot of states, there's not a lot of competition in the insurance market. In some states, the insurance market may be dominated by a single provider that could have more than 90% of the market. So there's not a lot of competition in those states. And one of the things we all know is that competition does impact prices. And so we think that's important to have a robust insurance market where there's a lot of competition and a lot of choices. And we think that'll help drive down costs. And then pooling, allowing, again, people to get into larger risk pools. We know that when you can spread risk and spread cost, you can bring down those costs for those specific businesses. So we think that's very important. I mean, today, commerce, as you know, is interstate. Everything is interstate. Yes, we have state boundaries, and there are things that happen within states, and we respect that. But commerce is interstate. People move across state lines, and we think it's important to give people some choice, and that'll introduce greater competition, and we believe it's going to bring down cost.
Earlier, you mentioned health IT as one of the issues that this coalition agrees on. What are some of the other issues where you feel like you can find common ground or you have found common ground with people who you typically might not agree with?
Well, I think we're moving to find common ground on pooling in this coalition. I think that's very important. I think there's a belief amongst the four groups that they recognize that that pooling is important, that it allows greater competition, greater choice, and can spread risk. So I think we're making a lot of progress there. I think there's some real progress around transparency that we should, as consumers, and we think smarter, more educated, well-informed consumers is good for health care. It's good for the individual. It's good for overall health care for our society, that if we have more information, that if we know about outcomes, if we know about how doctors perform, how hospitals perform, that's fundamentally going to be good for the healthcare system and put more personal responsibility to the individual. So I think we agree on that as well. We agree that technology needs to be injected into healthcare, that it's not really present today, and we need more technology in terms of the delivery of healthcare, and we think that's very important. So there are things that we're finding common ground, and I think we're going to continue. I know we're going to continue to work to see on other areas where we can find common ground as we go forward.
And looking ahead to 2009, a new president, a new Congress, hopefully a vigorous healthcare debate in the presidential elections. Are you hopeful? Do you feel like the environment is different now?
I think the environment's different because I think in 1994 it was enough for a lot of organizations to say no. But with the rapid increase in health insurance costs and health care costs, more people being uninsured, I think today it's a much more acute problem. And certainly what we're hearing, we've done a lot of polling across the United States of small businessmen and women. The small business voting bloc today, which means owners and their employees, represents about 43% of the voting electorate in the United States. And they've said very clearly in convincing numbers, more than 70-75%, that this issue, access to affordable health care, is their number one issue. And then they're looking very hard on where the presidential candidates are on this issue and what they're going to do as it relates to small business, because they really believe, and we believe very passionately, that if you fix this issue for small business, if you fix health care for small business, you're going to fix it for America.
Todd Sottomayor, president of NFIB, thanks for joining us on Health 08 today.
Thanks for having me. Enjoy being here.